Stuff with Steve Hothersall on Radio City Talk.
Radio City Talk, it's time for a return to the A to Z of Merseyside football. John Keith is back and we're moving on to E's this week, and there's a few to get through. We're going to start with a name. Morning, John.
Good morning, Steve.
A name
Good
that people will be familiar with, but maybe they don't know too much about the individual. So kick it off.
Yeah, start with the E's, as you say. A fine winger. He starred for Everton and the Republic of Ireland, and Northern Ireland, actually, in the 1940s and 50s. Tommy Eglinton. Older fans will remember him. He was signed along with his fellow Irishman Peter Farrell for a combined fee of £10,000 from Shamrock Rovers in 1946. A fine bargain that was for both of them. He made his debut in a 3-2 home win over Arsenal in September that year. That was the first season of official league football after the Second World War. Now, ironically, as happened with quite a few Irish players, soccer wasn't permitted at Eglinton School. It concentrated on Gaelic football. So he had to develop his skills after school hours in the fields near his family's Dublin home. But there were hours very well spent, because Eglinton's searing pace was a nightmare for opposing defenders, and his great crossing ability provided the ammunition for a whole litany of Everton centre-forwards, including Jock Dodds, who we've done, Harry Catterick, yep, Jimmy McIntosh and Dave Hickson. Now, Tommy was hailed as one of the greatest left-wingers of his era, but he also packed a fierce shot, and he fired himself into the record books, listen to this, scoring 5 goals in a 7-1 home rout of Doncaster Rovers in September 1952. But by then, Everton had dropped into the second division. He was the club's 16-goal top scorer that season, which is terrific for a winger, and was again in double figures the following year, 53-54, when they returned to the top flight as neighbours Liverpool went down. In all, he scored 82 goals in 428 appearances for Everton. He played, as I say, for both Irish international teams, 24 times for the Republic and 6 for Northern Ireland, which was permitted in those days. And he was first choice for Everton from his debut right through to 1957, when he crossed the Mersey to spend 4 years at Tranmere. He then went home to join Cork Hibs and then ran a butcher's shop in Dublin, where he died in 2004. And I actually caught up with him in Ireland when Everton played there in the 90s. But he was a fine player and certainly worth his place in the A to Z, Steve.
I love those players who finish and end up as a butcher.
Or, I know.
There's so many, aren't there, that yes, have gone on to do sort of extraordinary yes things. What did Dixie Dean do? Was there something Dixie did?
He ran a pub in Chester.
That was it, isn't it?
And after that, he worked for John Moores. John Moores found him a job at Littlewoods as a porter, would you believe? And this just shows the difference. Players today, they're set for life before they're even 30, a lot of them in the Premier League. And these guys, they retire and they have to find other jobs.
Even if they're average in this present day and age. The other thing that amazed me about those first stats on Tommy Eglinton, the fact that you could play for Ireland, Northern Ireland and the Republic of
yes,
Ireland.
Yes, it was permitted for a certain number of years and then it was stopped. I think FIFA got involved because you couldn't really have players playing for two internationals. But several did it. Several players did it. And some from Everton, of course. Everton had a whole batch of Irish players. I mentioned Peter Farrell. They had Don Donovan, who we've done. Tommy Eglinton. And there's quite a lot of them. One of those little idiosyncrasies of football that they could play for both international sides.
Slight quirk. Let's get on to our next name. And when you hear this name, you think, unfortunately, of Manchester United. Johnny Evans, but it's not that one. It's a different one.
And the John is spelled differently this time. It's, switching red to blue, Johnny Evans, J-O-H-N-N-Y. And like Eglinton, suffered the crushing blow of relegation, but it couldn't detract from his finishing skills. It brought him 53 goals in 107 Liverpool appearances. Now, that's some going. Indeed, his 29 league goals in 1954-55, added to the great Billy Liddle's 30, steered Liverpool away from the unthinkable prospect, and it was a very real one, of dropping into the old third division. They finished 11th in the second tier, the lowest league placing in the club's history. The previous year, with Liverpool rock bottom in the top flight, desperate Liverpool manager Don Welch signed Evans and his Charlton teammate Frank Locke, who was a defender, from Charlton on Christmas Day 1953 for a combined £30,000 fee. And that was then an English record for a deal on Christmas Day.
The figures these days are just so different, aren't
they? Yeah, I know. And he scored 5 times in his first 16 league outings, but not enough to stop Liverpool going down, destined not to return until the Shankly revolution of the 1960s. But Evans continued to score goals. He became the first Liverpool player in 52 years to hit 5 in a match. That was in a 5-3 win over Bristol Rovers at Anfield in September 1954. A feat, of course, since equalled by Ian Rush and Robbie Fowler. Mm. And the following March, Evans scored all 4 in a 4-3 win at Bury. That same season, Liverpool, who were then 14th in the old second division at the time, went to first division neighbours Everton in the FA Cup fourth round and produced what is, I'm sure, the biggest shock in Mersey Derby history, winning 4-0. Evans scoring twice and Liddle and Acourt adding the others. It was quite a stunning result. Evans also gained an unwanted distinction, becoming the first Liverpool player since pre-Second World War to be sent off when he got his marching orders in an FA Cup third round replay against Lincoln City at Anfield in January 1955 after he'd scored the extra time winner. Evans' scoring talent recognised with selection for the Football League against the Scottish League at Hampden Park in March 1955, and of course he scored, although they did lose 3-2. Evans left Anfield for Colchester, and after playing non-league, he managed Grays Athletic in 1965-66. But a man whose goals, particularly in that 54-55 season, highly valuable to Liverpool, Steve.
His ratio, unbelievable. 107 Liverpool games, 53 goals, yes. 1 in 2. Every club wants a 1 in 2
exactly.
goal scorer.
Exactly.
Right, we're going to steer away from a name for our third E because it is so relevant to both our football clubs. And you've chosen for the third one.
Well, it's European football, Europe, Steve. Highly topical now because both Everton and Liverpool set for their return to continental combat in the new season in the Europa League and Champions League, respectively. Now, Europe, apart from the seasons following the 1985 Heysel disaster, has been a staple diet for Merseyside fans for 55 years. It stretched from the fringes of the Arctic Circle to the far-flung outpost of the Soviet Union and taking in a grand tour of the Mediterranean, Scandinavia, every country in the British Isles, even straying into Asia when Liverpool went to Trabzon. Merseyside's European odyssey has delivered triumphs in every major competition, either the new or old labels, making the city of Liverpool Britain's most successful against foreign opposition. Although the bulk of those achievements have a distinct Anfield flavour, with Liverpool's 5 European Cups, 3 UEFA Cups and 3 Super Cups, Everton's lifting of the 1985 Cup Winners' Cup neatly fills the gap in their neighbours' glut of continental prizes. But of course, Tranmere Rovers too have experienced the frisson of checking passports and boarding cards. They competed in the Anglo-Italian Cup for 3 seasons during the 1990s. Everton set Merseyside's European ball rolling in the autumn of 1962. They travelled to the Kingdom of Fife to play Dunfermline in the first leg of the opening round of the Intercity's First Cup. That later became the UEFA Cup, now the Europa League. Liverpool's first continental engagement, a European Cup trip to Iceland in August 1964 in the European Cup, now morphed into the misnomer of the Champions League. They won 5-0 against Reykjavik, the start of a remarkable journey, which I've chronicled in a new book called Reykjavik to Rome, which is available in various bookshops, Pritchard's in Crosby, Broadhurst, Southport, Literary Books, New Brighton, or they can get it by calling 0773 715 666. Europe and Merseyside, a remarkable story, Steve.
Yeah, there's a special relationship between our football clubs and Europe, isn't there? One that we do love to talk about and certainly love to, you know, associate very closely with Liverpool and Everton.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, it's become part of the diet of football here. And last season, for instance, when there wasn't any, people missed it. They expected to be there, to see these clubs, sometimes with very strange names, arriving from wherever. So yes, it is, and it's back for both clubs. Let's hope they both have long runs.
Was it greeted with scepticism when it first arrived, European football?
Well, of course, it had been going before Everton were the first Mersey club to go in it, but then it was sort of an exotic thing you saw on black and white television. But it was treated with a little bit of as a novelty value. Mm. But then, of course, the the financial value became important. And then, of course, the fact that players playing in Europe wanted to, if you were playing in Europe, they wanted to join your club, they wanted to sign for you. So it did become very quickly a very important part of English football.
Three brilliant E's today. Tommy Eglinton, Johnny Evans, the Liverpool one, and European football as well. John Keith, many thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
Another A to Z of Merseyside football coming next week.
Your guide to Merseyside sport. The kickoff.
Radio City Talk.